The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Donetsk on the night that Spain had a nanny in for their date with the neighbours and were awarded with some happy cesc. The pod relives the raw drama and then counts down to Thursday's Whopper in Warsaw, asking the big questions like, do Italy need a finisher like Phil Brown needs a dictionary? And can the Germans live with Pirlo, fulfilling the fantasy of football fans worldwide? All this and more in today's Football Daily. Woohoo! Welcome everybody to day, what day is it? Day T-3 or something, here at the Euro 2012 European Football Championships thing. Lovely night in Donetsk, the stars are out, and so's Paul Doyle. Paul, fresh from 120 minutes plus penalties there. Spain. Oh no! You just put something in your mouth. We'll come back to you. We'll come back to you. Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Hi. Oh,
that was very high pitched.
What was your hello?
Yes.
Yeah, but you're a girl. It's okay. It's becoming in a woman, in a commentator, less so. Hi, Simon Burnton.
Hi.
Yay. Yeah, there's always an exception to every rule, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Great to see you all, and we've all just sat through. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. We were sitting when we watched it. Spain-Portugal. The extra time really enlivened things, didn't it? And then there were the penalties at the end. A game that came to life after 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. And it was quite surprising that extra time enlivened things because it looked like Spain were quite jaded and perhaps having 2 days less preparation or less rest before the game looked like it may have taken a toll. Portugal were certainly jaded, having pestered them brilliantly for 90 minutes. It's hard to keep that up. But Spain did find some extra energy and also an extra or a different approach. The introductions of Pedro and Navas gave them a width, a bit of speed and a directness that they had lacked hitherto. And they made a big difference. Not quite enough of a difference to yield victory before the shootout, but certainly made it more entertaining.
That was the key to what swung the game their way. It wasn't Portugal getting tired and not pressing them the way they had been.
Both of those factors, yes, I think so. Anyway.
Let's talk about the penalties and some interesting sights there, not least of which Nani scurrying after Bruno Alves. What had happened there? Had Bruno Alves misread his position on the penalty taking list, do you think?
It appears that way. I mean, I think probably when you're selected to take a penalty or you select, you know, put yourself forward in a semi-final, that you are probably, or it's very much forgiven if you're completely consumed by what you're about to do.
Right.
I wouldn't have thought it's beyond the realms of possibility that he just was so engrossed with trying to prepare himself for his penalty that he obviously wasn't really keeping track of what else was going on.
Right. It's pretty rough. Have you ever seen that before? Another player running out after somebody's about to take a kick, sending them back so they have to come back a bit later on? As disastrous as it turned out, no?
Well, he might have missed anyway. I mean, he didn't look in fantastic, confident mood going up initially, but I mean, it can't have helped. But I mean, there's all sorts of things that obviously Portugal will be an inquest into whether or not Ronaldo should have been number five in the list of penalty takers. But I think these sort of things it's all very easy to be wise after the event with something like this, because if that fifth penalty had been the high pressure penalty that had either won it for Portugal or kept them in it, then that probably would have seemed like a very reasonable decision.
But it was a night when destiny forgot all about poor Chris Ronaldo, wasn't it? It wasn't just that moment at the end when a couple of times the camera cut to him and he was building up to his big solo, and then it never came. The curtain came down before they'd even had... But before that, he had the chance to sew things up.
Well, I mean, I think that moment in the last minute of normal time when he went through, although I think the pass wasn't actually perfect because it was slightly behind him, which might have not helped, but he still put himself into a brilliant position to, you'd expect him to at least have a pretty good go at scoring, and it just looked like this moment of destiny was there, and then it sort of didn't quite happen for him.
In extra time, his most impressive bit was his rolling around on the ground after a...
But he was trying to force destiny a bit too much, wasn't he?
Well, he
was shooting far too often when there were better options. And although the biggest culprit in that regard was Almeida, who on at least three occasions I can think of off the top of my head could have put in someone better, which there were 10 better Portuguese than him on the pitch.
Mind you, I'd have loved to have seen Ronaldo's face if Almeida had missed that last-minute chance instead of him.
Oh.
It was just kind of... It was
kind of fitting that he was never given the chance to stamp his name on the game, because the game had started particularly well for him and for Nani on the two wings, and they really looked like, with the Portuguese midfield harassing the Spanish central midfield so well, it looked like those two players could be decisive. But every time Ronaldo had a chance to shoot, and there were lots of free kicks that everyone got very excited about, and his shooting was all over the place. Well, when I say all over the place, I mean specifically one place, and that's some way over the bar.
Simon, would you stat us?
You want Cristiano Ronaldo shooting stats?
Yeah, I bet you got some stats about Portugal not having any shots on target.
Yeah, they didn't have a single shot on target.
Throughout the game, 120 minutes.
120 minutes, and
that's poor,
not a single shot on target. It is poor. And it's not as if that they had their tactic was just to shut up shop and park the bus. They attacked, but those shooting boots were not at their best.
That was the big failing, because other than that, they do deserve a claim for the way they approach it. If you compare that to the way France, for instance, tried to tackle Spain, this was a much more valiant effort. And Ronaldo even had a really good game right up until his and the team's decision-making in and around the box and execution.
Though you could say that Spain, because of the way they play, they tended to have an option when they were attacking, and a player who was in an imperfect position, say towards the edge of a penalty area, would always have the option of coming inside to someone else.
Which is what they tend to prefer to do rather than shoot.
Which is what they tend to prefer to do, and often that's the right thing. And you talk about Hugo Almeida's wayward shooting, but quite often he was given the ball, he was running down the inside left channel. He needed to smack it across goal, but there was no one there. So instead he just smacked it wide of the near post.
Memorably, someone on your Minute by Minutes describing it, Spain's game, as like pass the parcel when nobody opens the parcel. They have an airport tweeting in saying, Spain being booed for pasturbating on the pitch. Rather, yes.
I think that first half was really interesting, and I think particularly, I don't want to jump any guns, but if Germany do beat Italy, they could take a lot from what Portugal did in that first half, although obviously towards the end it took a lot out of them physically. But it was interesting to see Spain so kind of evidently thrown by, they're not in this situation very often where somebody else's game plan has such an impact on the way that they're playing, and they seem to be knocked off their normal course of passing. There was a point in the first half where I think I noticed Portugal were kind of building an attack from the back, and they had 8 players in and around the Spanish box. And I just don't think that kind of pressure happens that often for Spain. And I think Germany are a team that can replicate that kind of thing, but they do have a little bit more finishing perhaps in the team as well. So it would make it very interesting if that's what turns out to be the final.
If indeed it does, we'll talk more about the prospects for Thursday's game in a second or two. Right now, though, let's dial up Sid Lowe in Donetsk. Sid Lowe, I know you're in the middle of a busy press conference. Just tell us, Spain tonight, were they rattled, or did they show the true stuff of champions?
Well, I suppose you could argue they showed the stuff of champions in the sense that they were, I thought, very, very good in extra time, having been really not very good at all until then. And they showed that character that brings them into the game, and the fact that they continue to play. But no, of course it wasn't a good game. There's no two ways about that. But I suppose the bottom line is that they're in the final again. It was tense, it was nervous, and I thought Portugal did something that other teams haven't done, and they caused Spain problems that other teams haven't done. They pushed them higher up the pitch, they made life difficult for them, didn't let them settle, and didn't enable them to just dominate possession.
All right, Spain definitely panicked in the first part of the game. Do you think that Del Bosque will go back and make changes? We saw the substitutions work very well for them. Will that influence his thinking for Sunday?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, I think you see the speed of Pedro and the incisiveness that he gave them, the control that Seth Fabregas gave them, and Fabregas has an amazing record of being a really big player when it matters for Spain. And yet, of course, not being a star for half the time. You look back on 2008 and you could almost claim he was Spain's best player at the tournament behind Marcos Senna, and yet isn't a star. And I just wonder if maybe now he will get that chance in the final.
Brilliant. Sid, where are you right now?
I'm in the mix zone waiting for the players to come out, watching Javi Martinez is about what passes. Fernando Torres and Mata have already gone, the players didn't play, and the first of the players who did play who's out is Xabi Alonso, who's just across the way from me at the moment.
All right, I'll let you go, but say hi from us, eh?
I will do, Jimbo.
All right, and if you see the Germans are another day.
Yeah, if I see the Germans, I'll tell them.
Okay. Cheers, Sid. Amy, your thoughts on Spain?
Well,
say something that hasn't already been said about Spain. Go on, I dare you.
The way Spain play, and Cristiano Ronaldo will particularly appreciate this comment, but makes you appreciate Messi even more, because it makes you realise quite what's missing in this Spain team, because obviously they're geared up to play a similar way, but, you know, they're just can't possibly be anywhere near as thrilling without the Messi character. Right. Although I would say Fabregas, I think, has been really excellent trying to do his best in that role.
A system right. that requires Messi is a...
Well,
is
exactly.
Not... Well, yeah, but to be fair, they're not like David Villa either, which, you know, he'd be quite exciting as well on pass form.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's interesting that you've got a team who's reached the final and in less than half of their entire minutes that they've played so far in this tournament, they've actually had a centre-forward on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, really.
But I don't know.
No,
I don't know,
don't
because
think it's extraordinary.
No, it is extraordinary, but it's not that unprecedented on club level. You've seen teams do extremely well without a centre forward. And okay, today in commentary they were saying, well, without a centre forward, it's easier to mark this chap. He's not a centre forward, but that's not the point. The whole thing is, without a centre forward, markers don't know who they're meant to be picking up. Everybody's meant to rotate. It's meant to be a disorientating experience for the team that's defending. So I don't know.
But I thought
is it working? I'm not sure.
I think it's more to do with the mindset. I mean, they lack balls half the time, or they don't attack with enough conviction. They want to control games rather than attack. It's a really technocratic approach, bureaucratic almost.
Mm.
I think there was just a quick word for Casillas as well.
Yes.
Who, you know, with the first penalty save under pressure, I think really they needed him to be important at that particular time. And he was so cool. And his expression after he'd saved that penalty, he just didn't even flinch. He didn't, there was no fist clenching, there was nothing. He just kind of just got up.
Be great to see that final, wouldn't it? Buffon Casillas.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
We always look for a big development from a tournament, don't you? Some new wave sweeping football. I wonder if the change this time could be the end of commentary. I just wonder, have we reached the point where we don't need commentary anymore? Do you remember the old days? Everyone used to have fitted carpets. That was the mark of what you did with the house. You have fitted. And now everyone's got bare floorboards. You just don't need carpets. And I wonder if commentary is in much the same way, that kind of slightly comfortable feel under your feet. But then when you get rid of it, it's like, oh, this is much better, isn't it? I don't know. Just throwing it out there. Yeah, when you go to see a film, you don't want somebody sitting there next to you saying, well, this, and now the actors, yeah, now they've done this, and that's what this means. So do you really need that? Well, and football's a pretty simple game. There are games that are difficult that do need a bit of explanation. Football's fairly simple. Ball passes from player to player in one colour shirt or the other, and then either ends up in net or doesn't.
That would work certainly at matches where there's a full stadium.
Right.
In grounds where there's only 250 people there and you can hear people's conversations. Ah. It would probably be
irritating. You need the commentator to build up the drama a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we just get rid of the colour commentators then? Is that not what they're called? The colour commentators. The, you know,
the
sidekicks. Well, I'm not for any specific thing, but you know, they can do punditry after or whatever. But it just seems to kind of kill the whole vibe so often.
You didn't go for Martin Keown then today.
Well, it's nothing against him, but
you could. How about get rid of the other guy? The guy who's just giving you the names of the players on the ball, and you take.
Well, that's quite useful, isn't it?
Because
they're so very far away, especially in these continental games where they don't get in tight on the back of the shirt.
The British football is suffering from a dearth of truly creative colour commentators, and what we need to do is set up some kind of academy system, which I'm sure is what they've been running in Spain and Holland for years. They need to get in there early. They need to have the right kind of coaching, and then maybe in 15, 20 years' time, we can go into the major tournaments looking forward to getting some genuine tactical insight from the British colour commentators.
Beautifully done, Simon. But I actually think that the problem is they're being too creative. Basically, the role has gone from actually informing to being some kind of variety side act. But I know I just sound a little bit jaundiced here. Possibly too much football.
I think that if you're talking about commentary, I think that Mark Bright, Mark Lawrenson, Andy Townsend, I think they have disappointed me in this tournament. I think
but I'm not sure it's their fault. I think that there's this almost assumption now that you have to, that any dead any silence is dead time, and there's this fear of silence. I think it'd be interesting two things. One, to see if you could give the... I know there probably is a button you can press just to get crowd noise. How many people would take that option? I'd love to watch the game with just crowd noise. I take your point entirely, Paul, and I think it's a very sage one, that when there isn't that atmosphere in the stadium, you do need somebody to whip things up. But just to let people let the game express without talking and stating the obvious every
silence is okay. I spent a year in Israel a long time ago where there would be a every Saturday they'd show a live match from England. And without any commentary at all, it was on an Arabic TV station, no commentary at all, just crowd noise. At halftime, they would just show the pitch for 15 minutes with kind of general hubbub. And it was boring. I think some commentary and punditry, you'll be glad to know, James, I think that does add to the televisual experience.
All right, then. Good. Just checking. So we'll have little rugs. We just won't have full-fitted carpets. Perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps.
All right, that worked brilliantly. Good metaphor. Tick. Now, one quick comment about England. Tick that box as well. Wouter I. Jizzemans, I think, says, thought for pod, might England's woeful penalty record be linked to their preference for replays in lieu of penalties in domestic cups? That's a very interesting point, isn't it? Generally speaking, continental cup competitions involve a penalty shootout when a result is needed. I think the English are the only nation who insist on replaying matches.
Only one replay and only in one cup competition.
Yeah, but it's a big cup competition, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a very interesting shout. Good. Right. Thursday night, then. Even more passion and drama, etc. In the second semi-final, who's going to be facing Spain? On Sunday, Germany are taking on Italy. A few stats here. Germany, 4 wins out of 4 so far. They've won 15 games in a row now, which apparently is some kind of world record. But they've won none of their 7 meetings in official matches with Italy. How much does that mean to Germany's young side and their, you know, and then the veteran players as well? How much can Italy bring to this party? Oh, Paul Doyle immediately in with the answer. How much, Paul?
I don't know, but I don't think that's true. They've won 15 games in a row because they were hammered 5-3 by Switzerland just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but I think it's in competitive matches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Still, eh? Yeah, it's a fair point you make. If Switzerland can do it, etc. But Italy, yeah, they look great against England, but what are they going to do with the Mannschaft right up in their faces? James Horncastle joins us on the line now. James, yes, you've been following Italy, I know, and also the Germans as well. What are your thoughts going into this one?
Well, a lot has been made about this this record that Italy have, this formidable record of never losing in a major tournament to Germany, and some of the finest moments in Italian football history have come against the Germans. You think of the Partita del Secolo, the game of the century in 1970. You think of the 1982.
Tell us, why was it the game of the century?
Oh, because it's Italy were leading from very early on in the 8th minute, I think, and Germany got a last minute equaliser, forcing it to go into extra time.
Basically, it was 1-1 going into extra time and ended up 4-3 to Italy.
Yeah, it was an absolute thriller. And that sort of started the legend of this rivalry, if you like. There was then the 1982 World Cup final, which Italy won 3-1, perhaps one of the most iconic moments in World Cup history with Marco Tardelli's ecstatic, wide-eyed celebration. And then the 2006 World Cup semi-final when Italy kind of broke German hearts.
Grosso doing a Tardelli, no?
He did a Tardelli in Del Piero, scoring that fantastic goal on the break. Yeah. So they certainly have a bit of a hold on Germany. Although, I mean, when Yogi Löw was asked about this on Tuesday, he said, so what? I mean, this isn't an issue for our young players. We're a young team. And he's got a point to an extent because I think only Philipp Lahm, Bastian Schweinsteiger, Lukas Podolski and Miroslav Klose remain from the team that suffered the heartbreaking defeat to Italy 6 years ago. And the new breed, if you like, don't really fear Italy that much. They don't have much reason to fear anyway. I mean, Mesut Ozil was talking this week about, how, Italy is strong, organised, has plenty of respect for them, but if we play to our potential, we'll come out winners.
Germans have already published a match report for a 3-1 victory. What have the Italians been saying ahead of this one?
Well, they've drawn confidence from their record, but they're under no illusions whatsoever that the Germans are the favourites in this encounter. The leading question for Prandelli in today's press conference was, they're younger, they score more goals, they've had 2 more days rest than Italy. And Prandelli's response was, well, let's go home then.
James, we've had a couple of games that have gone as far as penalties recently to decide, you know, after not having a goalless draw for so long. Do you think that's going to be something Italy are looking for?
I don't think it is, because even before the England game, Gigi Buffon was saying that it wouldn't be preferable for them to play for penalties. They'd rather do it in normal time. But I guess the one thing that Italy will take from that quarterfinal is confidence in their means going into extra time and going into penalties. I mean, Riccardo Montolivo was saying that even when he missed, he was quite confident that Italy would go through. But I think from what we've seen tonight, which is quite a tight and cagey semi-final, I think we'll see a lot more open. Cesare Prandelli today was saying that, you know, he'd much rather concede a goal on the counter-attack than suffer in defence for 90 minutes. So I think we're going to see an open game, whether Italy lose heavily or not, or whether they keep it tight, remains to be seen. But I think there'll be goals in 90 minutes tomorrow.
Oh, you say so. When you look at it, and you look at the German record and all those wins they've put together, and the fact that Italy have had more shots than any of the semi-finalists, but fewer goals than any of the semi-finalists, and the number of players that Germany are bringing back into the side, and the fact they've had two extra days, it does look like they are massive favourites. Give us one reason, James, one reason why you think Italy could continue their incredible run against the Germans.
Well, I just think they have a bit of the hoodoo over them. There's perhaps more of a wave of momentum behind this Italy squad than there is the Germans, because I think Italy do not expect to be here. I think they feel they have nothing left to lose. If they were to go out at this stage of the competition, I think they could do so with their heads held high. I don't think there's any risk of them, you know, landing at Linate in Milan or Fiumicino in Rome and getting pelted with tomatoes. You know, I think they're very much in a strong position. I think everyone expects Germany to go through and have this final against Spain. But I think Italy will relish the underdog card again.
Indeed so. Well, we'll see you on Thursday night. James, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Interesting suggestion there. The momentum is more with Italy, because Germany got a bit of a narrative going on themselves, haven't they?
I can understand that the Germans feel that perhaps now is the time for their team to win a tournament. And Italy don't go into the match with any great pressure. They know that they can lose and still return as having massively exceeded expectations. Mm. So I can understand that. I don't really get the whole hoodoo business. You can spend too much time analysing history.
Spain had never beaten France, etc., etc., or hadn't for blooming ages. Hey, here's a stat about Germany. They haven't trailed in a European Championship match, this includes qualifiers, since the final against Spain 4 years ago.
Remarkable stuff.
Yeah.
They've been a phenomenal team to watch. I really like their dynamism. I look forward to watching them play against Spain. And I hope I get the chance.
All right, Simon.
I look forward to watching them against Italy. If it's half as good as that 2006 game,
they're
of those moments.
Classics,
where,
though, aren't they?
Well, I was lucky enough to be in the stadium for that match, and it was one of those moments where you just think, "Oh, this is why I love football." It was absolutely spine tinglingly brilliant, and you just didn't even want to blink. It was a fantastic, engrossing game that, you know, had so much. You didn't know quite where it was going to go. Both teams were really going for it, and, you know, ended with these phenomenal goals and this outpouring of emotion from both teams. And it was just really, really football at its greatest.
Yeah, it was a bit like tonight, wasn't it? It was quite quiet. they were quite tense the first part, and then it really caught fire in extra time. And of course, that was at home for the Germans in their own World Cup. You'd expect there to be a lot of Germans present in Warsaw for the semi on Thursday night. I would imagine so.
If you're suggesting that will give them an advantage.
Yeah.
I remember thinking back at the end of the group stage that the noisiest fans, so far as I could tell, had been Russia, the two host nations, Ireland, Holland. And they all lost in the group stage.
That's
none
true.
Of them went through. So maybe it's a better idea if they stay at home.
All right. Team news then. Schweinsteiger is in, apparently. But I think he'd be in even if, you know, his foot had fallen off, from what they seem to be saying there. Problems for Italy. De Rossi, Abate and Chiellini are all injured out, so Chiellini says he is going to be ready, which is going to maybe mean a change on the flank. I thought Balzaretti did quite well out there on the kind of flying fullback position, but Chiellini apparently coming back in. Maggio, of course, suspended. Oh, if De Rossi's out, that'll be a big difference. I guess the big question for Italy is, can Pirlo, after what has to be one of the greatest performances of his admittedly illustrious career, can he do it again?
Yes, but also, can he, you know, will he have the
well, that's the thing.
The environment to do that again,
right?
Because it was really tailor-made for him, the way that England played.
Khedira was fantastic in the last game against Greece, and you spoke about dynamism earlier. That was the best I've seen him play for his country anyway. And imagine that he'll be right on top of Pirlo.
Right, indeed so. Would you be all predicting then, as Simon is, a Germany win?
Yeah.
Yeah? Amy? You've got a soft spot for those Italians.
I do.
What do you think? Apart from hoodoos, what do you think that their chances rest on?
I think Germany are favourites, but that doesn't mean that Italy can't do it. Because
yeah.
I think Italy have got so much going for them in terms of the whole backstory of this tournament that's been touched upon. And I think you can't underestimate the influence of people like Buffon as well as Pirlo, who are so inspiring, I think, within the team. And they have that fantastic capacity to... I think they've played well as well during this tournament. It's not been at all a sort of sterile team. I think they've been quite exciting to watch. But they've got a real determination and backbone as well. Whether the centre-halves, which is maybe a weakish spot, can cope with the best of what Germany can throw at them is probably the area I'd be most worried about from an Italy point of view.
Their manager walks to monasteries as well, twice now. Just saying. It's got to count for something, isn't it? Well, there you go. That's coming up on Thursday. Ooh. We'll be back straight after the 90 or 120 or penalty shootout or whatever with our reaction to that game and, of course, a big look forward to the final. Whoever's going to be in it against Spain on Sunday, do make sure you join us for that. In the meantime, it's many thanks to producer Ben, to Amy, to Paul and to Simon and you, dear listener. We'll be back tomorrow. Join us then.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.